We cannot have you going sick, can we? Now let us get back to the job at hand. Your next mission is to join a group of workers who are at present at a different location on the astral plane. You will find that a great battle has taken place. There will be many souls walking around in the mist, not realizing they are dead. Your task will be to convince them otherwise. If you are ready, we will begin. We soon arrived in a different place but were still on the third astral plane. The mist was much thicker, but our training enabled us to see through it. We waited until a group of 12 other soldiers appeared from the mist. At the head of the group was a very familiar figure. Harry nudged me and said, "I've seen this bloke somewhere before." "Of course you have," remarked Jack. Before Jack could give his name, the group was on top of us. The officer stepped forward and introduced himself. "Good day, gentlemen. My name is Captain Marsh." He then introduced us to each of the soldiers under his command. When Chan felt all was well, he left for his work in the encampment. Captain Marsh called us to order and explained something of our work. "I have asked for the best," he said. "I am sure that's what you are. There has been a great battle not far from here. Of course many have passed to our side of life. Job is to get them away from the battlefield because the fighting still rages around them. If we don't, the lower astrals will get hold of them, and you know what will happen." He was correct. My friends and I had experienced enough to know what would happen to these new souls. "Right then," continued the officer, "we will split into 5 groups of 3. I will leave you to decide who works with whom." I turned to Harry and Jack and asked, "Are we together in this?" Harry smiled and nodded. "But, of course," remarked Jack. The groups were formed, and we moved off. We walked deeper into the mist towards the sounds of battle. Shadowy forms appeared, only to disappear just as quickly. We were called to a halt. The officer gave us a few words of encouragement, and the group divided to set about the work. Harry, Jack and I went at a tangent from the rest. Our orders were to help anyone who needed it. We stayed close together, knowing that the 3 of us would be able to cope with whatever faced us. We approached a wooded area. There was a foreboding feeling about the place, no sign of battle, just a feeling of being watched. Suddenly, a voice screamed at us from out of the mist, "Halt, put your hands up. Sprakendi English?" We immediately turned towards the voice. We were confronted by 2 British soldiers with their rifles firmly fixed on us. They seemed nervy and had obviously mistaken us for the enemy. Jack's voice boomed out, "Put those rifles down. Don't you recognize an officer when you see one?" This took the 2 soldiers by surprise. One turned in bewilderment to the other and asked, "What do you think, George?" The other replied, "Don't know, Fred. Can't see nothing proper through this confounded mist. You keep them covered, and I'll take a closer look. You there, keep your hands where I can see them." He edged his way over to us. "I don't mind telling you, I was a little afraid because the soldier's gun was pointing directly at me." He looked me up and down and went across to Jack, who took hold of the barrel of the rifle and pushed it away. "Well, Private, have you had a good look?" Jack asked. "Yes, sir," mumbled the soldier. "I'm sorry, sir, but you can't be too careful in this mist." He turned towards his friend, who also kept a very watchful eye on us. "It's an officer all right, Fred." Fred immediately lowered his rifle and walked over to us. "I'm bloody glad to meet you, sir. We've been wandering around in this mist for some time. You're the first people we've seen. Have you any idea where we are?"
"Oh yes, I know where you are all right," replied Jack. "But explaining it to you is another thing. If you and your friend would care to follow us, we will get you out of here." I turned and looked towards Harry. His eyes looked upwards, as if to say, "Thank God, that's over."
"Right then," said Jack, "if everyone is ready, we will go." Jack took the lead. We slowly edged our way back to the meeting area. The further we came away from the fighting, the clearer the conditions became. We were the first ones to arrive back.
"Where are we?" asked Fred.
I think you and your friend had better sit down, answered Jack. I have something to say to you that will surprise you. The two soldiers found a place to sit and placed their rifles firmly across their knees. I looked across at the two of them and read the pain and fear that was deep inside them. They awaited their surprise with apprehension. Now that you have made yourselves comfortable, said Jack, I will begin. Has it not seemed strange to you that you have found yourselves in this mist and that you have not seen anyone else except us?
Yes, answered Fred.
But what has that got to do with where we are now?
Well, said Jack, how did you find yourself in this mist?
Fred turned to George, I don't really know.
Do you, George?
It's strange, said George. I remember we came under attack from the woods we were passing. I thought I took one in the head. I fell but woke up in this mist. My rifle lay next to me, so I grabbed it as I stood up. I felt a strange sensation as if my body were not my own. This soon cleared. I could not quite make out where I was because of the mist and thought it best to find my platoon. That's when I came across you, Fred.
Yes, that's about what happened to me, echoed Fred.
Wait a moment. What's all this about, sir?
Jack paused. I did not think he would be able to tell them that they were dead, but he plucked up the courage. With raised eyebrows he began,
Well, gentlemen. The two of you have had your last battle. There will be no more fighting because you both died from the wounds you described.
Before Jack could utter another word, the two soldiers were on their feet with their guns firmly in their hands. They looked at Jack as if he'd gone off his head.
Look, said George, we may not know quite where we are, or what has happened to us, but we know we're not dead.
By the way, sir, that's an unusual uniform you have on.
It's not one I'm familiar with.
Have you seen it before, Fred?
No, I haven't, replied Fred.
They're not from our regiment, that's for certain. They could be Germans dressed up in our togs.
Once again the two soldiers raised their rifles at us.
Can you tell us who you are, sir, and what regiment you're from?
George asked.
Look here, said Jack, you're dead and so are my two friends. As a matter of fact, we are all dead to the Earth world. You're not helping things by pointing those guns at us. They will serve you no purpose here. If you wish to know who we are, I will tell you.
My name is Captain Jack Purvis, my friend to your right is Sergeant Harry Wilmot, and to your left, Fivet James Leggett. We are all soldiers, but not from your war. We are from the Great War, where we died for king and country. Like yourselves, it was hard at first to comprehend we were dead, but it soon became apparent we were.
Look here, sir, said George sympathetically. I think you had a whack on the head that has sent you a little balmy. Perhaps we can help you find one of the dressing stations, if you like.
Sorry I was a bit short with you. But this confounded mist is enough to make anyone nervy.
Harry cut George short. I will prove to you that you're dead. Point your rifle at me.
Now look, said George, we've had enough of this nonsense. I just want to get back to our unit. Please will you direct us?
Look, said Harry, I want to prove to you I am dead. The only way to prove this is for you to shoot me. It will have no real effect on me because I can't die twice.
I'm sorry, friend, said George, I'm not going to deliberately murder one of our own men. Fighting this darn war is my job. We've seen enough of our men butchered by the Nazis. Killing them is all I want to get on with.
George paused for a minute, rubbed his head and said, I think the three of you have some sort of plan up your sleeve.
Yes, that's it. You want to get back to Blighty by making out you're shell-shocked.
That's a good un.
No, cried Harry.
That's not right. We are telling you the truth, and I am trying to prove it. Please just point your rifle at my shoulder and fire. I promise there will be no comeback on you. Now, hurry up. I want you to see the results.
By this time George had become agitated.
Bloody do it, cried out Fred, so we can get out of here.
Right. Don't cry to me when it hurts, shouted George. He pointed his rifle at Harry's shoulder and fired.
It threw Harry backwards. A hole the size of a penny appeared in his shoulder, and blood poured from the wound. He lay groaning on the ground. On realizing what he had done, George flung his rifle to the ground and rushed over to Harry. There was a slight grin on George's face, as if to say, "I told you so." Slowly the grin faded from his face as we watched the severed edges of the wound knit together until there was no sign of Harry's having been shot.
"My God, it's healed itself," cried George.
"Are you satisfied now?" I asked.
"I'm going off my head," said George. "This can't be happening.
Fred, did you see what happened?"
"Yes, I bloody well did," he said in a tone that suggested he didn't know if he was coming or going.
"What in hell is happening to us?" he asked. Harry climbed back to his feet. When he had fully recovered, he stepped forward to where Fred stood. He looked him straight in the eye and said, "You're not in hell yet, mate. But, if you don't take notice of us, you will surely drift there. As to being off your head, no you're not. But you are dead. Well, dead to the world you used to know. You have seen for yourselves what happened when you shot me. If you would like to look at my shoulder, you will see there is no evidence of my having been hurt at all." The two soldiers just stood there with their mouths open. I saw tears in the eyes of one of them. "It's quite a blow when you first realize you are dead. What happens to us now?" Fred asked. Jack answered, "We will wait here until some of our friends arrive. You will then be taken to a place where you can rest and adjust to your new home." While we waited, we took the opportunity to explain our work, hopefully in an understandable way. We also spoke about life on the astral plane. However, shocks began to affect them. Fred paced up and down. He stopped every now and then to mutter something to himself. "I'm not to see my wife and kids anymore," he whispered. "What will they do without me? No father to bring them up. They will have to fight for a miserable pension. How could this happen to me? How could it?"
"Will you shut up?" shouted George. "Your whining is driving me mad. Just shut up." Tempers were becoming frayed. I did my best to calm them but had little success. Suddenly Captain Marsh appeared out of the mist and asked, "Now, what's all this about?" Fred immediately began his story but was cut short by the captain. "Quite right," he said, "those bloody bureaucrats have it all their own way. It's left to the likes of us to fight their wars, but there is nothing we can do by arguing. So let's have no more of this nonsense."
"Sorry," said Fred, and he gave a quick salute.
"Right then, lads," said the officer. "You will no longer require your rifles. You can throw them away."
"That's good." As soon as they had thrown away their weapons, we made tracks out of the region. We headed towards the halfway house for lost souls. This particular building was different from the one I had gone to, but the organization was the same throughout the lower astral plane. We left George and Fred in the charge of a sergeant and made our way back into the mist. Before we got very far, we came across some of our group. They too had been successful. We did not stop to talk but continued on our way. I turned to Harry and said, "That was some chance you took in being shot."
"Not really," he said. "I can tell you one thing, though, I was bloody afraid. We were told to use our imagination. The pain didn't matter. All I cared about was proving a point. But, I don't mind telling you, it hurt."
"Yes, well done," said the officer. "You used your initiative. That's the way. All of you have done extremely well. And, the more of this type of rescue you do, the more efficient you will become. I must go back to headquarters. I will leave you gentlemen to carry on." The captain was soon out of sight.
"Which way shall we go this time?" inquired Harry.
"What do you think, Jim?"
Jack asked.
"This time," I replied, "let's go in the other direction." We walked back into the mist. Occasionally there was an opening in the mist which we used to get our bearings. We wandered around for some time until we spotted another clearing, which we entered. We made out the outline of a building. When we looked more closely, we saw other buildings.
We had stumbled on a farm. The farmhouse had been under attack because all the windows at the front were damaged. We approached with great care, knowing it might be occupied either by our chaps or by the enemy. We stopped some yards away to assess the situation. It looked deserted, there was no sign of movement. "Do we go in or do we bypass it?" Jack asked. We were discussing amongst ourselves when I got the feeling we were being watched. The feeling became stronger when I tried to shake it off. I had to say something about it. I was the only one to sense it, but we acted on it by taking a closer look at the house. We approached it rather gingerly. I saw a small face peering from the corner of one of the windows. Whoever it was realized they had been seen and disappeared quickly. I shouted, "Come on out. We mean you no harm. We just want to talk to you." We waited for an answer, but none came. Suddenly the silence was broken by a loud crack. There was another and another. We didn't have to be clever to realize we were being shot at. Whoever was firing the weapon was not very accurate. We pulled back to plan the best way into the house. We knew we must materialize ourselves there. We also knew this method might shock the souls if they sighted us. It was a chance we would have to take. The three of us linked hands. Within moments we were in the house. The room was sparse, except for several large boxes piled near the window. I noticed movement from behind the boxes. "Look out!" I shouted and pushed Jack to the floor just in time. There was a loud crack, and a bullet whizzed past our heads. There was no time to think. Harry rushed towards the boxes and dived in. We heard a fierce struggle going on. Jack and I pulled ourselves to our feet and rushed over to give a hand. Before we could reach him, Harry gave out an enormous laugh and said, "Well, I'll be. You all right, Harry?" I asked. "Yes, thank you," he said. "Look what we have here." Harry stepped from behind the boxes. In one hand he held a struggling young boy by the scruff of the neck, and in the other a rifle. "That's mine," cried the boy in broken English. "Give it back to me." "You just wait a minute, lad," replied Harry. "We're not going to hurt you. We only want to talk to you. Calm down." Jack went over to talk to the boy. There was another violent struggle. The lad gave Jack an almighty kick in the shin. "That bloody hurt," cried Jack. "I ought to give you a clip around the ear for that." I interrupted because I felt the tension rising. "Jack, let me have a word with him." Harry still held the boy in a vice-like grip and was not going to let go. "Now son, what's your name?" I asked. "Pierre," he replied. "Look, Pierre, we mean you no harm. Are you alone?" I asked. "Yes," he said. I had the feeling he was not telling the truth, but I thought it best not to say so. "Pierre," I continued, "if my friend lets you go, will you promise not to run away?" He gave Harry a look that would have turned most men to stone. He then turned to me and looked into my eyes. I sensed the fear in him, but I knew I had to react differently to him than I had to John. "Well, what's it to be?" I asked. "I promise not to run away, but tell this one to take his hands off me." "Right, Harry, I think we can trust him," I said. Harry let go. "My gun, I want it." "Give it to me," cried Pierre. "No," I said, "you don't need it anymore." "Are you Nazis?" he asked. "Are you going to kill me like you did my mama and papa?" "No, we are not Nazis," I said. "Look at our uniforms. We are British soldiers. If we were Nazis, we would have shot you by now. We are here to help you." "It's too late to help me," he said. "My family's gone." Tears trickled down his cheeks as he explained about their deaths. "To help you," I said, "we must take you to a place of safety." "No," he cried. "I'm not leaving here, not without." He stopped abruptly. "You're not leaving without whom?" I asked. "Nobody," he replied. "I just want to be left on my own. That's all." Jack turned to me and asked, "Do you think there are others here?" There was an immediate reaction from Pierre. "No, I am alone," he he cried. "Look, Pierre," I said. "I know there are others here. You are hiding them. Believe me, we mean you no harm. If you are British soldiers," he said, "why are you here? We are occupied by the Nazis, not the British. You are probably German spies." "That's it, Germans dressed in British uniforms. I'm no bloody German," remarked Harry. "As to our being spies, take a good look at us. Our mission is to help those, such as yourself, in occupied countries. We don't have a lot of time. If you want our help, you had better make up your mind." I saw the approach Harry was taking and joined in. "Yes, our orders are to find as many young partisans as possible. They will be trained as freedom fighters." These words had a positive effect on Pierre. He chirped up, "Will you help me fight the Nazis?" "Yes," I said, "we will teach you how to become a freedom fighter." My thoughts were of freedom for those oppressed by war. The weapon would be the will, not the gun. "Good," he said. "I will come with you. First follow me." He led us into another room and pulled back a small carpet, revealing a trapdoor. "Wait here," he said, and raised the door. He disappeared down some steps. Jack tapped me on the shoulder. "What are we going to do with them now?" "He will expect us to teach him to fight. Who knows how many of them are down there?" "Wait, I have an idea," said Harry. "Why not give Captain Marsh a shout? Perhaps he can help." "That's a good idea," I said. "What do you think, Jack?" "It could be the answer," he replied. "I will try to contact him." Jack shut his eyes and concentrated for a short while. Suddenly, the silence was broken by the sound of feet on the steps. The noise broke Jack's concentration, and he was back with us. "Did you manage to contact him?" I asked. "Yes," he replied. "He's doing what he can to find Pierre's parents. He has asked me to touch Pierre's head for a minute or so. He will then be able to link with Pierre's vibration. When he has tuned into him, he will know all about him. Also, hopefully, from this contact, he will be able to find Pierre's family." Pierre lifted himself out of the opening in the floor and said, "We come now." He knelt down and pulled out two smaller boys, fussing over them for a moment or so. "These are my brothers," he said. "When Papa died, I became the man of the house. We had near misses with the Nazis, but they never got us." "Little does he realize," I thought. "Come over here, Pierre," called Jack. Pierre went over to where Jack stood. "Now then," continued Jack, "I want you to stand to attention like a good soldier." This pleased Pierre. He stood like a statue. "I want to check your head size," said Jack. "It's important for a good soldier to have the right sized beret. It must hold the badge of his battalion. We in the British Army consider this an honor." I could not help but chuckle to myself and think that now I'd heard it all. But it gave Jack an opportunity to place his hands on Pierre's head. Captain Marsh had plenty of time to gain the required information. "Right, Private Pierre," said Jack, "get your brothers and follow us." We left the house and stopped outside for Jack to make sure everyone was together. "Where has all this mist come from?" inquired Pierre. "I remember when the sun used to shine. It was always so clear, never this mist. One day I woke and found everything covered by it." Harry was quick off the mark, replying, "You're right. It's a new weapon the Nazis invented." Pierre accepted the explanation, temporarily anyway. We journeyed back to the meeting area. I found the captain and explained what had happened. "We will hold them here," said Captain Marsh. "We are still trying to locate their parents." "Right," I answered and went back to the group. I called Harry and Jack to one side and explained the situation. "We will have to keep them occupied until the captain sorts something out," I said. We returned to the children, and I started a conversation with Pierre. "Do you believe in God?" I asked. "But, of course," he said. "Does not everyone? Please, can you tell me why these soldiers walk around without guns? Is it not dangerous? How do we defend ourselves if we come under attack? It's quite safe here, I said. You will not need a gun. Anyway, we will not come under attack. Tell me, Pierre, what happened to your parents?
The Nazis shot them with the rest of the villagers. My brothers and I hid. I was so angry I ran back to my home and got Papa's gun. My two brothers came with me. We hid until dark. I found a good place to ambush the soldiers who killed my parents. I kept my brothers close by because I knew we would have to run for our lives. The lorry carrying my parents' murderers came into view. When they passed us, I opened fire. I hit the driver, and the lorry swerved and went down a bank. I had not realized how many Nazis were inside the lorry. The next moment the ground was alive with them. They screamed and pointed in our direction. There was gunfire all around us. I was very scared and held on to my brothers. There were some loud bangs, which I think were grenades. I don't remember much after that. An explosion knocked us out. I woke in a daze and found my brothers lying next to me. We were surrounded by a strange quietness and mist. I shook my brothers, hoping they were still alive. My heart skipped with joy when they came round. We pulled ourselves together. After all that had happened, we did not have a bruise amongst us. It was quite strange. I remarked to one of my brothers how lucky we were not to have been found by the Nazis. Although the mist was thick, we eventually found our way home and stayed there until you arrived. HMM, I muttered. That's a very interesting story. I wondered what to say next and decided to take the bull by the horns. Pierre, I began, would you like to see your parents again? I waited for his reaction. He looked up and stared straight into my eyes. What do you mean? He asked. How can I ever see my mama and papa again? They are dead, killed by the Nazis. I will never see them again, never. You are wicked to say such things to me. Tears welled up in Pierre's eyes. I put my hands on his shoulders, son, you must be strong. In death there is life. I promise you. You will soon see this for yourself. Pierre looked up and spoke with a quiver on his lips, please, what is happening to us? It all seems such a bad dream. No, not a dream, I said. It is the start of a new life for you and your brothers. You will receive the happiness and joy that has evaded you over the past months. Pierre dried his eyes with an old piece of rag from his pocket. He could not understand what I was trying to say. With his next breath he asked, "You mean we are going to England?" "Not quite," I answered in a tone that sounded as if it came from the bottom of my boots. Pierre jumped angrily to his feet. "What do you mean? You promised to take us to England. You promised." "I know what I said," I snapped back at him. "I promised to make you a soldier. Eventually, you will become one. Many things happen in our lives over which we have no control, such as dying." I paused for a deep breath before continuing. "Do you remember your fight with the Nazis?" "Of course I do," he replied. I paused, and then said, "You and your brothers were not just knocked unconscious by the blast. You were killed by it." I waited for his reaction. He smiled and sat down. I asked if he'd heard what I had said. "I heard," he replied, "but you were joking." "No, I'm not joking," I said. "You and your brothers are dead. I and all these others are dead too." Pierre laughed at this and repeated what I'd said to his brothers. All three laughed out loud. The laughter caused some of those who stood close by to turn their heads. For no reason at all, they joined in. "Oh dear, I can't convince them," I thought. Jack approached us and whispered to me that Pierre's parents had been found. They were on their way. I returned my attention to the laughing boys and asked, "Have you finished yet?" "Oh, you Tommies are so funny," cried Pierre. I saw the smile on Pierre's face disappear, and I looked to where he was looking. Coming our way were an officer and two others. "Well, here we go," I told myself. The laughter died completely. Pierre let out a scream. "No. It's not them. It can't be them." Slowly Pierre got to his feet and walked towards the approaching figures.
What started as a slow walk soon became a run. His two brothers followed close behind.